to Talk is Jericho. It is the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And guess what? Today is Friday. That's right. And today's episode is being brought to you in part by Great Clips. Because at Great Clips, we want you to love your haircut. That's why we created Clip Notes. Notes that tell us what you like. So you get your same great haircut every time, every place, everywhere. And remember, with Clip Notes, no matter which stylist cuts your hair, you're going to get the haircut you want only at Great Clips. And only here on Talk is Jericho. It's the debut this week, today, of Sean Waltman, X-Pac. He's finally on Talk is Jericho. I've been waiting for this one for a while. I tracked it a few months ago in Philadelphia, and here we are. I knew the conversation was going to be great, and it is. Sean is an amazing guest, man. He's got such a great mind for the pro wrestling business. He always did, even when I first met him back in 1994 in Tokyo, Japan. He's super cool about sharing his knowledge and trying to help the younger guys just getting started. He's gonna you're going to hear some of that coming up, and of course, he's telling us stories from his WCW and WWE days, including the massive concussion he suffered in his match with Scott Hall. He was really close to Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect, in with the NWO, part of the Click with Shawn Michaels and Triple H. We'll talk all about that. And if you want to know about all his gimmicks, 123 Kids, 6-Pac, and even a couple that never actually worked out, like The Man, just keep listening. Sean Waltman's on his way. He also, when I first got to the WWE, was one of the guys that helped me kind of get acclimated to the WWE system. He was personally put on the case by Vince McMahon to mentor me. We're going to talk all about that and about the good times and bad times we've had. Great guest, great conversation with Sean Waltman. And hey, Talk is Jericho fans, I know you love to be the first to know what's up with this podcast, who the guests are going to be on any given show. And I got so many great ones coming up. It's going to blow your mind. 2017 is going to be the best year yet for Talk is Jericho. I'm just letting you in on that. So if you want to know who the guests are going to be and when and where the next Talk is Jericho live podcast is going to take place, got lots of those cooking as well. Podcast One has created a new automated email system to make sure you never miss a single episode or the details about every episode. All you gotta do is go to podcastone.com/Jericho to sign up, and then we'll take care of letting you know exactly when a new show is out and what it's all about. So sign up now at podcastone.com/Jericho. That's podcastone.com/Jericho, and get all the info about upcoming Talk is Jericho extravaganzas.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, so we're here in Philadelphia, the new hometown of Sean Waltman, X-Pac, 6. Right?
Yeah. Hey, I've been waiting to do this like pretty much since you started it.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I've been, I was pretty stoked when you.
Oh, it's funny because we ran into each other in Wales at a Comic-Con, and I hadn't seen you for a while, and that's when we started talking about it. And you said you live in Philly, so I had you on. I have a little list where every town I have some names. As Philadelphia, Sean. I was like, oh, perfect. So it worked out great, man.
Yeah.
You know, and it's good to have you here, especially, you know, you were here at Raw. You're coming by to visit and hang out, and
sure.
What do you notice, like, when you come these days to see the show, see the guys? Do you know a lot of the people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot, you know, I've stayed pretty active, like, on Independence. And, you know, I was in Mexico for a while. And so a lot of the guys that are here now are guys that I knew, like, you know, after I left here and I did Independence.
Right.
So,
but I mean, you see, and I was thinking about this today because we were talking about Mexico, about how you live there, and I also used to live there, and we used to go to Norman Smiley's house. He had an apartment, and he had satellite TV, so we would go watch this new show called Raw, and seeing you on there as, like, you know, the hot young upstart that upset Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, you're like a pioneer for smaller guys. And in a lot of ways, you were the first small guy to ever get a real push in the WWE.
Kind of. I mean, there was guys that were, you know, that I was taller than, but like stature-wise and being, you know, being a skinny guy. Hey, you know, it is what it is, you know.
Especially in that day and age. There was no smaller guys whatsoever.
Yeah. And really, there was, like, you were around, like, there was, you know, Van Damme, Sabu, Jerry Lynn, and, you know, Dean, who him and his father trained me,
right?
Dean Malenko,
yeah,
and, you know, all, everyone,
Eddie, yeah,
everybody, we, man, all... and I was just really fortunate and to be at the right place at the right time, you know, and I'm really grateful I didn't drop the ball, you know.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying, because, like, you know, nowadays in the WWE, I guess, what's Zach, you're not a small guy, I'm not a small guy,
right?
But in those days, we were small guys.
We were.
Now, the majority of the roster here is guys our size.
I would say we'd be considered, like, if we were in Calgary, we'd be mid heavyweights.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. But now it's like you kind of opened the door. So, and Sean and Brett as well. But they were bigger muscle guys. But for a guy like you said, your stature, you've opened the door, so all of these guys now have jobs in a lot of ways here in the WWE.
That's kind of, I mean, that's cool when I hear people say that. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels good to hear that. I'm just grateful that, you know, I've gotten to do all of these things like that. I just wanted to be in the business, Chris. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to be a part. Like, even if I was the guy in the first match and I never, but then, you know, once you get there, then you want, if, you know, if you have some drive and ambition, you want more, you know, it's like,
yeah, once you get to, right? I remember if I could just wrestle on TV.
Yeah.
And then the first time I wrestled in Calgary TV, it's like, now I want to wrestle TV next week.
Right.
And the next week, you know. Uh-huh, but you mentioned being at the right place at the right time for this thing that you did with Razor.
Yeah.
What was the right place and time? Were you working jobs?
Well,
were you doing?
No. I never. I always thought that, well, first of all, I was a late bloomer. Like, as far as, like, I couldn't grow a beard until I was like 25, you know, and my body was a, like, you know,
a
kind of a kid's body, you know,
1, 2, 3 kids. Sure. Sure. Cause you're a kid.
And I wanted to be a man so bad. You wouldn't even believe, you know, cause I was a father already.
Really?
Yeah. At 19.
That point in time. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. My kids are 23 and 21, Chris.
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, you were a young father getting in the business.
And in so many ways I had it together and everything, and was more mature than I am now, probably, man. If I'm going to be honest about it.
Yeah, right.
So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to just continue the story of how you got that moment, that chance with Razor.
You know, I started in Florida. I'll try to make it, because a lot of people know already my story, but I started in Florida with Malenko's. Mm. And really, I started setting the ring up when I was 10 with Gordon Nelson. Do you remember Gordon?
Absolutely.
Yeah. He was Mr. Wrestling and for Blanchard.
No kidding. Gordon was a guy.
Bad mother.
I'd always heard that and never knew it at the time. Like, at WCW, Gordon Nelson and Klondike Bill were the guys who set up the ring.
Yep.
And you would never know the history of both of them, but Gordon Nelson was a badass
Gordon
shooter.
Gordon Nelson could stand alone.
And would say anything about it. And you think back, it's like, I hope I treated him with respect, which I think I always did, but I know a lot of guys probably didn't.
Probably, yeah, probably not. And he, you know, probably till the day he died, he could probably handle, you know, just about anybody. Yeah. And his son Steve, not to get all off into the weeds here, but his son Steve was a really good Sambo guy and did a little bit of MMA, too.
I think he ran some MMA shows down in Austin, where they're from, or something like that. So you were set up the ring with Gordon?
Yeah. So I always put myself in the right place, even from the time I was 10, because I knew somebody that would bring me to the St. Pete Bayfront Center for all the shows. He worked mm-hmm. there. And so my very first show was Dusty versus Flair.
Wow.
With the Midnight Rider as a special ref.
And everyone thought the Midnight Rider was Dusty, right?
But the Midnight Rider was everybody that was on the undercard would come out and go back, and then another guy would come out. It was great, man. Sullivan and Ron Bass and Barry Windham, Mike Rotundo.
Great crew.
Oh my God.
So that's like early 80s or something,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you end up setting up the ring? Just hang around?
Yeah. Well, you know, they always need help with that, with the ring. Nobody's ever going to turn down, hey, do you want help taking down the ring? Of course we do. Because at the end, you know, it was always just Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
But I just went everywhere. And then I started going to all the, you know, every town that I could. I skipped school all the time and everything, you know.
Watch the matches or to actually go wrestle?
No, to go watch the matches at first. And then I was 15. I just dropped out of school and I started going to Malenko's.
Was Dean training or was Boris training?
Mostly his dad, Larry Boris Malenko. Hmm. And he was so incredible. It's so hard for me to express in words just what an incredible teacher he was. The way he articulated things and the way he showed you the technique, and like he actually taught a guy that was mentally handicapped. I mean, the guy couldn't, you know, obviously go out there and tear the house down, but the guy, like, you know, he taught him technique. The guy felt, I mean,
wow,
it was incredible. He was just amazing. And, you know, Terry Funk said he was the greatest promo guy he ever heard.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. He was amazing.
Isn't it interesting because Dean, not known for his promos,
right?
His dad known for being one of the greatest. That's interesting.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So Phyllis Lee, who, like, may she rest in peace.
She just passed away recently.
She just did, yes. she was like the first one to believe in me. So
was she working in Florida?
She was partners. Well, she helped Malenko at the school and running the shows and everything.
Okay.
And then I lived with Phyllis and I helped them promote the shows and I, you know, all of that. And Larry, you know, I would be with them every day and I'd have breakfast with them. And, you know, I never paid a dime, you know,
To train. You never paid a dime?
Never, you know, but I stayed in the ring all day. I never left the ring. I was the guy that got thrown around. So my technique was really sharp because, you know, I was in the ring 10 times, maybe 20 times more than everybody else. I was the tackling dummy. That's how I paid my my wrestling.
But that's how you learned. Yeah. That's a great bumper too over the years.
Sure. Yeah. But then I moved to, you know, Minneapolis. That's where I hooked up with Wrestling Jerry Lynn. And you know, Keller's there. So
you guys were tearing it up too, though, way before. Like I would always hear about 123 Kid and Jerry Lynn.
Right.
Before, this is way before ECW Jerry Lynn. I think before anything Jerry.
Sure, sure. Then,
you guys were kind of like the Dynamite Tiger Mask. You would hear about
of the
guys.
Midwest. Yeah. Right. Yeah, we worked each other. So I can't even imagine how many times. You know, hundreds probably.
Yeah.
But, and he was so, I don't know if you ever worked with him, but he was
a few
really,
times in WCW,
really,
but never really, really got to have really a real good. Great time with him, but great worker, obviously.
Yeah. And we were killing each other back then, too. Like, I'm sure he did the same thing, right? Like, first of all, you know, I go to Minnesota, and that's known for being the land of the Giants, the Road Warriors, all these big guys, right?
Yeah.
And it was when I got there, too. But I'm not gonna mince words about it. Most of the guys up there were the shits. So, you know, we go out there and we're going off on each other and we're doing shit they'd never seen before.
Is this AWA?
No, it's PWA.
Okay.
It's Eddie Sharkey's Pro Wrestling America. Yeah, and because Vern's AWA was, you know, it was so down. Yeah, we were outdrawing them.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was always around.
So Wade Keller's up there, and he has, of course, the Pro Wrestling Torch.
Yep.
So he's telling everybody about you guys.
Exactly. So another example of being in the right place at the right time. And then Eddie would be the referee when the house shows would come to the Target Center in Minneapolis. So I'd go there. And, you know, and then, you know, the global wrestling, the GWF stuff.
Yeah.
I got that. Yes.
Texas.
Yes. And then I would go to the Plymouth Gym. The famous gym, the Road Warriors owned, and another, you know, putting yourself in the right place at the right time.
You're just always in their
faces.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost to the point where they get sick of seeing you. Almost.
Yeah. But that's kind of, and I'm not saying it's different now, but actually it is different now because now there's NXT. You know where your mission is to go. Back in those early days, we started about the same time.
Sure.
1990, 91, 92.
I started in 88. Okay. Well, when I started training, but.
Okay, so I was like, 90.
Yeah.
But you were constantly.
Basically the same time.
I remember my dad was always saying, you got to sell yourself. Pick up the phone. Yeah. I was calling. I called Global Wrestling. I think I got a letter from Bill Eadie saying, thank you for your tape, but we're not interested.
Oh, one of those letters?
One of those things. But you had to do that. That's the only. There was no internet. There's no cell phones to text. You had to pick up the phone or get in their faces and just show up.
Sure. Yep. Know? And that's how it all happened. And I became friends with Kurt Hennig before I ever came to work
Another
here.
Minnesota guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he like befriended me. Like he was that guy that, you know, always like grabbed a hold of the young guy and like tried to help him, you know.
Yeah.
He said that it was his he was taught like by guys like Piper and that it was his duty to pass on the knowledge. So that's my, you know.
I always got that vibe from him as well.
Yeah.
In WCW, especially when a lot of guys weren't really going out of their way to help.
It's pretty stingy guys, you know, with the knowledge down there, because a lot of those guys were the old, more older school way of thinking. Scott's like that too. Scott Hall, still.
To not tell you anything?
Well, he would, like, I'd be like trying to smarten somebody up and he'd go, hey, shh. And I'm like, my opinion on it is like, look, if they're worth telling, then they'll get it. If they're not, they won't get it anyways, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Just my way. And, you know, because Scott was around Murdoch, and Murdoch was real stingy with the knowledge.
Yeah. But like you said, how would you ever learn? Because Henning, Arn, and Jimmy Hart were the three guys that I can remember trying to help. Or if I asked them a question, they would give me a real answer. not like, hey, did you watch my match? Oh, yeah. What'd you think? Oh, it was all great.
Right.
Okay, obviously you didn't watch my match. You
right.
know what I mean, right?
Arn would, yeah, Arn would do that a lot. Good finish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that finished that thing. Arn went pretty good over there.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is hockey. Talk is Jericho.
How did you finally crack into the WWE? You said you're hanging around, you're friends with Henning. Did they get you a tryout? Or
I got hired by New Japan, right? I worked another, like, okay, Hawk left WWF, right? Mm-hmm. So he's going to work for New Japan, and he's forming Hellraisers with Kensuke Sasaki. And so that bar that we wrestled in, Jerry and I all the time, they were debuting their match. I don't know why they picked this little bar, but the atmosphere was good.
Right.
So they were debuting that tag team.
The Hellraisers?
There, yes.
In a bar in Minneapolis?
And Ropers in Fridley, Minnesota, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, and at the time, I was like kind of Eddie's, like, you know, Sharky's the guy that made the matches and booked the show, like, what, and the angles and all that stuff.
Yeah, cool, yeah.
And so I put Jerry and I were teaming, so I put us against Saito and Brad Rangins. And then, like, Saito liked me a lot and booked me for the Super Juniors, and they were going to ask me to go to the dojo and all that. Then I get a call from Sergeant Slaughter, and I didn't even realize what he was calling me for. And I put him on hold for like 5 minutes. and I'm thinking, who's running TV the day after WrestleMania? And I went, oh, shit.
Oh,
yeah, because I'd already had a WCW tryout, right? Kip Fry really liked me.
Mm-hmm.
And I go and have this tryout with Bob Cook. And Bob Cook was great. I don't know if you ever seen much of Bob Cook, but, like, he was the guy, the job guy, but, like, just fantastic. Big Terry Funk was his idol. A lot of guys were.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But always known for, like, one of the best punches in the business. But
And you were wrestling as Lightning Kid.
Yeah,
at the
Lightning
time.
Kid. And everybody in center stage knew who I was because of Global and that. But they told me, go out there and do all your stuff, Dusty and Magnum, you know? They told me that, or one of them did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did what they told me and went out there and did all my stuff, all of it. So obviously the match, it got a reaction, but it made no sense whatsoever, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as like showing that I had any kind of grasp of psychology. And honestly, looking back, I kind of didn't, or else I wouldn't have done the match like that in the first place.
But the thing is, you're a young kid just getting your first chance in the major leagues. They would probably have to see that and go, listen, okay, there's no psychology here, but the athleticism and the fire is there.
Okay, right, but here's the problem. The next day, Kip Fry was gone and Bill Watts was brought in.
Bye-bye.
Bingo, yeah. But he did give me a call, though.
Mm-hmm. To tell you.
Yeah, yeah. He did give me a call because he knew I'd trained with, like, you know, with not so much Carl Gotch, but his son-in-law, Masami Sorinaka. Like, Carl would come sometimes, but, you know, then Malenko. So he respected my training anyways.
Your shoot credibility.
Right, whatever. Right. But, so that was cool that they called me, but I knew as soon as he looked at that tape, I knew. Yeah. And I wouldn't blame him.
Right. So. But when Sarge called you, what did he want you to do?
Come in for a tryout.
Okay.
Yeah. And then when I came in, Tony Garea come up to me and he asked me, do you see anybody here that you think you have a good match with? And immediately I saw Louis Piccoli and I went, Louis Piccoli.
Oh, that's cool.
Because, you know, if I would have had like Virgil or somebody like that, or somebody that works here full time, they're definitely, it's, and I wouldn't blame them. They're not going to want to go out there and have this match catching me on, you know, flying outside. The stuff I did in my tryout match, Chris, was insane.
Well, once again, this is 1993 or so, where I remember Hayabusa just passed away. He did a moonsault in 92, and I'd never seen one before. Except for maybe seeing like Mood or something, but to see one live, guys were not doing that sort of stuff. So right. You, once again, you're a pioneer flying out to the floor and all that sort of stuff and all the crazy stuff you mentioned doing.
Yeah. And Louis just gave me an amazing match.
Because Louis wasn't working there full time?
No.
Okay, gotcha.
No, but he was coming in and doing jobs. Mm-hmm. Just coming in, and I wasn't that guy. For two reasons. Obviously, like I was saying before, I looked so young. It was like, you know, maybe if they put me under a hood, I didn't fit the type, right? Mm-hmm. They want the job, but Louis, they brought in for that. But you get typecast as that. They start looking at you in a certain way.
That's true.
You know? And I told Louis, I said, you got to go away. If you got to get away from here as far as coming in and doing TVs, man. I know it seems like the, you know, right thing to do, but back then it wasn't the right thing to do if you wanted to.
Yeah, if you wanted to get
you establish
shot.
Yourself in the indies like you did, like I did.
It's very rare to come in as a job guy and get a push.
Right.
It happens, like the Hardys, it happened with the Hardys, but
sure.
Very rare. So the smart thing to do is not show up.
But the Hardys had been away for a while and brought back.
Gotcha.
So it wasn't that they were just one day they were jobbers, the next guy they were day they were getting
they were
pushed.
Getting a push, yeah.
Because they weren't really trained originally.
Yeah.
And then themselves. They went to Dory Funk Jr. Then they and now I mean
they went through the WWE camp Dory put on, but before that they just trained themselves in their backyard.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So when they brought you to TV and you get this tryout, did you get hired that day or?
No. That's funny because at the time I was promoting the show with Dennis Caruso, and I worked with Sabu, Terry Funk worked with Hawk, Brad Rangins worked with Taz,
big show.
Jerry Lynn worked with Candido, Nails and Charlie Norris worked with Masa Saito and somebody, I forget. I can't remember, but so like I was doing all that stuff, and I thought he was calling me for that. Honestly, I thought he.
But you went there with Louis and had a great match. It sounds like.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, totally.
So how long was it before they called you to come have a job?
Oh, that's right. Sorry, man. You got to forgive me. I go off.
That's okay.
Yeah, sometimes you're going to have to pull me back.
I've known you for 25 years. It's okay. I got you.
Yeah. Thank you. You can see it in my eyes. Good. Yeah, I'm like, help me out here.
Drifting off into space. Where are we going? Come on back, Sean. Here we are.
Yeah. It was like I said, I was helping promote that show with Dennis.
You had your trial and then went back to work.
No, didn't hear anything, you know. It was probably only a month, but it seemed like forever longer. And boom, I got the call from Vince just out of the blue.
Vince called you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What
did he
say?
He ran the whole idea by me. Yeah, and then he goes, does that sound good to you? And I'm like, because I couldn't even really have a conversation with Vince at that point, Chris, to be honest with you. I was very intimidated.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially when he's calling you on the phone.
Yeah.
I remember when he called me on the phone to bring me in here, I was mortified. Like, I would say something, and it would be like when you say something stupid to a hot chick. Yeah. Why did I say that? Stupid, stupid, stupid. But that's what it's like.
Yes.
You know? So the whole idea that he ran past you, just give me the brief.
He told me I would come in, and he even said who the guys were that were going to squash me. Curtis Hughes, Doink, and then Razor, and then boom, you're gonna get the victory like out of the blue, and bam, and then, you know, I was just like, holy shit, that's like the greatest way I've ever heard of being like, in that's 10 times better than getting vignettes and coming in and getting squash matches and trying to get over that way.
Wow. And just, you know, because we always laugh at, you know, WWE is a big man territory. It always has.
Yeah.
But for Vince to see that, once again, before the junior heavyweights, these smaller guys, quote unquote, were prevalent in America, that shows a lot of vision on his part to know that I can do something with this.
It was cool. Scott says he knew 6 months ahead of time, and that he thinks Vince was going to hire me before my tryout even for this, like had me in mind before that. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But I just know that, like, I was standing outside the door after my tryout, right? It was the second, because it was only supposed to be one night. They brought me back a second night, and Louie and I had another one, just killed it. Yeah, even more. I'm standing outside Vince's door, right? And the whole time, I mean, as soon as I got dressed, I was standing there waiting just to get an eye contact, something. And Kurt comes up and goes, "You want a job?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he walks in, and he walks back out and goes, "Okay." He was probably bullshitting me.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, yeah. That was Chief J. Strongbow's nickname for Kurt Hennig.
Because he always looked like he was up to something.
Dennis, what's with the ha-ha? He would always say.
Because Chief J. had a nickname for everybody,
I was
right?
The trailer.
What were some? You were the trailer?
Yes. Shawn Michaels was trailer because I was always the last one. I was like the caboose.
Shawn Michaels was what?
Teaspoon. Scott was my, I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Small body, something maybe.
Yeah.
Scott was what?
Machismo. Mm-hmm. Kev was Big D. I don't know. He had nicknames for it. Pat Patterson's Wimpy. Howard Finkel's Prophet. Depending on what mood Vince is in, it was either Emperor or I can't remember. Oh, shoot. Anyways, but you know.
Yeah, yeah. He had something.
Yeah. And so, like, Raven wanted to know what his nickname was, right? And he kept coming up to Chief and going, "What about this? What about that?" It's like, you don't give yourself your own nickname.
Raven trying to give him something.
So he never got a nickname.
Nothing, right? No nickname is your nickname. So when you first came in, like, was Scott, because Scott Hall's the guy that pulled the upset on, was he into it? Was he cool with it?
Yeah. Except for I was all gung-ho, right? I came in and I'm already at Manhattan Center, like, 5 hours early. I remember vividly because I'm sitting there and there's nobody in the building and Four Non-Blondes is playing on the monitor that What's Going On song, which will always be in my mind. I'll always remember it from that very day, right?
But
those guys, I don't realize that they're coming coast to coast.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm thinking we're going to have this match, right? And Scott looks over at Pat and goes, "What do you want me to do?" And he goes, "Just beat the shit out of him and then have him move and do something. Just pick one thing." Mm-hmm. And then he goes, what one thing? What do you want to hit?" And I went, "Moonsault." And Chris, I am known for moonsaults. And that's so funny to me because I've, like, the worst moonsault in the business. And it just came out of my, I just blurted it out of my mouth. I hate it. I had this, like, fear of going straight back.
Yeah.
So it was always kind of off to the side, kind of Bam Bam Bigelow-ish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, it just ended up working.
wasn't it a standing moonsault though? Wasn't he standing?
I got climbed. Yeah, he was standing.
Yeah, like a top of acai moonsault.
Exactly.
And it's funny that I remember that because once again at Norman Smiley's apartment, I saw that.
Yeah.
You know, 94 or so, and go, holy shit.
Yeah.
He won? And that's when I remember thinking to myself, I could go there.
Yeah, of course.
Because before that, you never knew for sure.
Right.
It wasn't like it is now. It was all about 6'5" and 6'8".
And squash matches.
Squash matches. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I'll ever go there. And then I saw you, and I was like, I can do it.
Yeah.
He did it. And that shows that I can go
totally,
there.
Totally,
You know, because we had met at that point.
Smoky Mountain.
And Japan 2 War, WAR.
That was after I already worked for Vince.
After. Okay, so
remember Mountain. I had that post-concussion syndrome?
Yes.
And you and like Meng and and we're like trying to keep me awake. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
It's funny that you remember that.
Oh, totally.
Had the concussion, yeah.
Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Christmas.
All right, Sean, let me ask you something. How did you get the name 123 Kid?
Oh. And, you know, there's like probably four people or five people that tell me, oh, yeah, that was my idea, you know.
Yeah.
I came up with it. You know, I've heard Pat say it. I've heard different people say it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just the 1, 2, 3 chant started going, and that's what they went with because there was no name for me. Like, the copy, they would try to copyright something and it wouldn't go through. You
oh,
know,
really?
Trademark
yeah.
or whatever.
Because they didn't want you to, have Lightning
Of course
Kid.
Not.
Yeah, it's yours. Can't keep that.
But I'm in Japan doing the Super Junior because they let me go fulfill my obligation, right? That's why I had the match, I beat him, and then he challenges me. Because originally, when Vince ran the story by me, it was like it wouldn't have been that long before we had the rematch. But I said, I have to go
you
do the...
You were gone
the,
to Japan. Yeah. Wow, okay.
You know, and Vince is awesome about that,
yeah.
you know?
He's because an old school promoter.
Exactly, because he won't want you to do your deal for him,
That's
right?
That's right, yeah.
And so while I was there, somebody was reading a Gong or Weekly Pro or one of those magazines and went, oh, you 1, 2, 3 Kid. And I'm like, bullshit. I hate that. I'm like, anything but that. Like, people would ask me, like, what's your wrestling name? And I wouldn't want to tell them, Chris. Seriously, like, now it's fine.
Yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
But at the time, I can see that, though.
Yeah, but...
It's a little cheesy.
Oh,
I'm the
totally.
1, 2, 3 Kid. You're like,
yeah,
what?
And the blue, like, bubblegum
yeah.
singlet and tights. Like, it was so exactly the opposite of the image I wanted to portray.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be the badass, right?
But they wanted you to be a kid.
They wanted me to be what I was.
Yeah, right.
Not what I wanted to be.
So, obviously, then, you probably had a pretty good... a good friendship with Scott.
Because yeah.
Because that, you know, he made
yes.
you.
Yeah, and then so finally when I come back 6 weeks later, we have the match, and I go, like, I'm supposed to dive, do the flip, you know, Tupacon Hero or whatever the hell you want to call it, off the top to him on the floor. He pulls the pads back, and he's going to give me the razor's edge on the concrete. I backdrop him when I climb to the top, but he's like, oh, kid just got back from Japan. He's probably, you know, already up there, you know, rushing, you know, not taking his time selling, but I'm taking my time selling, and all of a sudden I got to hurry up, and I climb, and I go to jump, and I slip off, and I just white, I just eat shit right on the concrete in my head, right head first, man.
Oh, wow.
If you go back, you can see it. Yeah, and so it's live. And I'm supposed to get the money, and right, that's supposed to be it. I hit him with the flip. I wipe him out, grab the money, and haul ass and get in the car and take off.
You put up money for
$10,000. Okay. And there was really 10 G's in there. and Arnie told me there was three grand missing when I give it back to him. Arnie Skolan, yeah. But so when I wiped out, Scott looked over at Vince and, like, what do I do? And Vince went like this.
He looked down?
Yep. Like, you're on your own. And you got about a minute before we're going off the air.
Wow.
And he threw me back in the ring. And he was just going to, like, try to, like, he didn't want to beat me because he knew that I'd have been, my push, everything would have been done from
yep.
there. I was so, at that moment, it was so, like, I could have been so effed.
You were completely at his mercy. And Scott decided to pin you. You're done.
That and just like all this is on the line,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And Earl was even just saying, just beat him. And he's like, and just out of nowhere, I went, moonsault.
Just that damn moonsault.
And he went, same thing. And I went, uh-huh. And boom, and I moved. And we did the exact, and it was the best moonsault I've ever done in my life. And I hit it, and Scott was going to take the pin. He was just going to have me beat him. And Earl's like, 1, 2. He's like, kick. So Scott kicks, and they both go, get the money. And I'm so out of it. Like, I was so concussed, it wasn't even funny, right?
Wow.
And, like, I stagger, and I'm grabbing the money, and I'm just staggering down the aisle, and here comes Scott behind me. And I don't know if I felt his wind or whatever, but all of a sudden, I just kicked it into overdrive, and boom, and he just missed me, right? Like, he was about to take my head off, and he would have. Like, if you've ever worked with him, you know what I'm talking about.
Right, yeah. Because Scott, once again, is a deceptively big guy.
Yeah.
You don't realize that he's a big dude, especially back in those days when he was all jacked up as well.
Because he would walk around, like, kind of, like, you know, kind of a little
over.
Bit hunched over sometimes, and you wouldn't, and then as soon as he walked through the curtain, boom.
Yeah.
You know?
He's big, yeah.
Yeah, he would he would straighten up. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, no, man. And I could have been screwed, and just, it was, man, like that, I was so, that was a, I'm really grateful, man, that mm-hmm. thing came
like
off. You
said, that could have been the end of it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about the WWE at that point in time in 95 or so. Still in the cartoon era in a lot of ways.
Yeah, totally.
Cartoon character. Even 123 Kid is, you know, that's a cartoon
sure.
name.
Yeah, I think it even got worse after, you know, as I was there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Yeah, of course.
They went through the phase of the T.L. Hopper. And
yep. Everybody had an occupation.
Occupation.
Yeah, Spark Plug Holly. Yeah.
Right, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Thurman?
Thurman Sparky Plug, yeah.
Thurman Sparky Plug. When did you start seeing a shift into more of the Attitude Era?
It didn't happen until we left and came to you, up to you, down to you guys. And once we started killing them in the ratings, then they finally... Then Vincent started after it was NWO and all that crazy stuff. We wanted to do that together here. They started doing DX,
right? Cause that's
after
what you became...
after the NWO thing.
Really?
Yeah, totally.
Oh wow, yeah. I didn't realize that. Okay, so I mean,
we all wanted to do it together, like the Click thing, you know.
I get it. You're
right. Vince hated groups. Vince didn't want to do groups at all.
Huh. Because you were a part of the Click, that's right. What I'm thinking of, right?
Yeah.
And that was kind of the unofficial gang of you guys.
Sure, but that was all backstage.
Right, backstage stuff.
Yeah.
So the Click was you, Sean, Razor, Diesel, and Hunter.
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
A lot, we loved the bits. All we did was talk about wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And we all got messed up. I mean, there was a lot, and we really, really liked each other a lot, you know? Mm-hmm. The messed up, getting messed up part, because Hunter didn't get messed up at all.
He was always the driver.
Yeah, when he came, yeah.
He's a driver.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, we knew when we saw him, like, in WCW, like, that he, like, this guy's going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to be great. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we saw him, as soon as we saw him at TV, we're like,
come over here with
sorry
us.
We know you're it's cool that you want to be nice to Walter Kowalski,
yeah,
but now you're driving with us. So
did you guys have a pretty big backstage influence?
Yeah, in some ways it was like what people say, but like there were certain things that people just thought we had a whole lot more influence than we really did. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, each of us probably have our own perspective on it because, I mean, even though we're all a group, like, we're still each separate people, mm-hmm. right? Like, I mean, I looked at things a little different probably than mm-hmm. you know, we had differences of opinion. You know, all of us did, but not over anything important, really, but...
Was there ever times when you would, kind of go to a battle of wills with Vince? Like mentally, like, you know, we want to do this, he wants to do this.
Yeah, when we called him one time when they wanted to just like do a phantom title change with Sid and Scott, mm-hmm. where Sid won the belt, like, and Scott, and like, that was just part of it. Everything was like, you know, we weren't happy with everything, right?
Right.
I can totally get why, you know, people hated us. Don't get me wrong at all. You know, looking back from other, like, because I try to look at things from other people's point of view other than my own, and I'd be like, yeah, I'd hate them too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But wrestling is a political business, though.
Yeah, and if other people, like, had the chance to do it, they would have done it too, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe not everybody, but, mm-hmm. you know.
So guys, you mentioned they wanted to do a phantom change. And Vince-
yeah, and that was just, I think, what instigated us getting on the phone and calling them up and bitching to them about it. And I think Scott was hot because he didn't want anybody to think, like, I think part of it was like, what, so people are going to think I didn't want to do a job on TV? Like, you know, if the phantom just let me just drop to him if that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I'm pretty sure that was like the catalyst to the whole Vince and Jerry Briscoe flying and meeting us in Indianapolis.
Is that what
happened?
Then
showing up to the house show with us afterwards and just piling more heat on us. The rest of the locker room just saying, oh, shit.
So Vince and Jerry flew out to meet with you guys?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, and we're like talking about, hey, come on, like you're not using, and like people think we're always burying guys, Chris. I swear, man, at this point in my life, like I have no reason to bullshit
you. Honest guy, yeah.
You know, there were certain guys that weren't pulling their weight. Like probably that got buried. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie, but like guys like Bob Holly weren't being used right, and you know, just guys like that. And then we're like, and Bam Bam, and like, and we're like, you know, it doesn't matter if they don't like us and we don't like them. Those guys can play on our team. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, not trying to paint ourselves as angels by any means, but I'm just trying to like give a more real picture of
right
of how it was.
Right,
you know,
right, sure.
I mean, we really did care about the overall product. Like, it was paramount.
Mm-hmm.
We just thought that we knew better than everybody else how to fix
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. But once again, you've got, you know, this group of guys, including Shawn Michaels at the time, who was probably the best performer.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And knowing Shawn at the time as well, probably knew it and probably
sure, yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Has that power because he's too damn good.
Yes, exactly. He was the only guy that could get away, and people probably heard this before.
Mm-hmm.
The only guy that could ever get away, like I've ever heard of, got away with talking to Vince like the way he has.
Right.
He was really, you know, he'd be the first to tell you, man. He was really difficult to be around sometimes, even as a friend.
Right. Really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Man.
You guys spent all that time
oh
together.
Yeah, man, we spent like we'd be all in one room sometimes. They'd pull the drawer out for me. That was a Kurt Hennig joke. He'd always say that, or if I was real pale, he'd say, oh, the middle ball burnt out in the tanning booth.
But the thing is too, like, I can see how you would fit in with the clique because you're a very smart guy when it comes to the business.
More so than people realize because I didn't back then articulate myself.
Well, and you also, you know, you're like, hey, you know, dude, what's up? You're laid right. back, you know what I mean?
And I was f***ed up all the time.
F***ed up, yeah, high, whatever it may be. But you are a very, very smart guy when it comes to the business.
Thank you.
And I've noticed that years and years and years ago.
It was all... I think intelligent. I think there's a common theme in successful people in pro wrestling, and I think that's intelligence. But it takes more than that, right? Like it was just the incredible mentors I had, like Kurt Hennig, even like Roddy Piper, and you know from Malenko, starting with Malenko, and just everybody. Even Eddie Sharkey taught me tons of stuff, you know. Just everybody.
Mm-hmm. Just
Everybody, man. Even if they weren't trying to teach me, they taught me.
You know, and we've talked about this, but when I first came into WWE, once again, you're talking like when you first came into WWE, you don't really know what you're doing. And I even worked in WCW, but it wasn't the same. Like, I didn't even know what bumping and feeding was when I came to WWE. As crazy as that sounds, Never did it. We never had it. So when I came up here and I worked a few months, I worked a match with China where the night after the pay-per-view, I got destroyed by Vince. Vince and Blackjack.
I remember.
Remember?
Yeah, because I read about it in your book, which was a fantastic book, like not trying to blow smoke.
Man.
But like I said, I look at things from other people's perspective, and I want to know, honestly, what other people's perspective, like, thought about me, just like Brett's book.
Right.
You know?
And I knew you, and we were friends, but we weren't really friends.
Right.
You know? And one of the things Vince said, because he buried me huge, you know, you're green as grass and you're the shits. And he said, if you don't have a good match tonight, I'm putting you with X-Pac, if you don't have a good match tonight, it's over. And I was like, oh, like what a...
I remember you came up to me after, I'll tell you the story.
Tell me the story from your perspective. That's
yeah, well, I'll tell you how that ended up happening.
Mm-hmm.
It was because you said you had had, you'd mentioned you'd had the match with China.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, at this point in my life, I just told like it is,
right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She complained that you were like hurting her.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I bet you she didn't complain to you at all, did she?
Nothing.
Right. She made it seem, And like, she was, I don't want to go off on her,
right.
But I said something to Shane about it. Like, hey, man, like, you know, somebody say something to Jericho.
Because I'm the new guy coming in.
Right.
And also I came in with a push and a contract.
Yeah.
I'm sure I had more heat than I ever could have imagined.
Not like heat, like you're a dick heat.
But just here's this new guy coming in with.
Yeah. Not even that, I don't think. It was, okay. From my perspective, I don't think anybody really thought of you like that.
But there's, now there's heat. Yeah.
Well, yeah, so I'm bitching about you to Shane, and Shane obviously went to Vince, mm-hmm. and I wasn't surprised that Vince talked to you. But when you came and you told me how he talked to you, I felt like shit, oh. man. You know, because I mean that was because of me. That's one of the reasons why I was so happy, like finally get to do this show with you.
Yeah, man. But see, but once again,
we had a hell of a match, right?
We did.
Yeah, and every match we had was a hell of a match.
We always, we had great chemistry always. But and one, that's another thing though, is that that's just it's, when you hear this, it's not even something. Oh, you motherfucker! That's how it was then. Right. The business has changed so much over the last 5-10 years. There still was. I say this all the time on the show. But the Monday Night Wars was real.
Yeah,
so when I come over from WCW, automatically by myself with no friends, I can understand why there's. I'm under the microscope.
Yeah.
And then China.
Everybody was, man. When they bought WCW,
yeah.
Oh, if somebody didn't shake somebody's hand, they were.
Everything.
Oh, it was like, come on, give everybody a break.
Before they bought it, I came in on my own. But first. And another thing is China had a lot of political power because she was dating Hunter.
Right.
And if you look at those matches we had, I don't think China had two better matches than the two that we had.
Probably
they
not.
They were great matches.
Yeah.
But something was rubbing her the wrong way, and I think it was the fact that people were cheering for me because they didn't want to see me working.
Wow. See, I didn't know. You know? Yeah, but.
And she got a black eye, but she was no.
Big
I mean,
deal.
She was fairly.
Did you see what Chono did to her?
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, my God.
Really?
Yakuza kicked her head clean off her shoulders in the Tokyo Dome.
And that's the thing. Vince said when he first put me there, listen, he goes, I want you to work with her like she's a guy.
Yeah.
I don't want you to it's not going to work. And I wasn't stiffing her. I might have gave her some stiff shots.
You ever feel her? You ever feel that?
I just said that. Point being, like you said, this is not a thing about China, but
right.
being, yes, she probably got stiffed as I did, as you did, as all of us did. But I think because all of these things culminated at the same time, there was a real big blow up on Vince's part. And so when he said to me, you better go out there and have a great match tonight. And we did. We had a great match. And as soon as we had that match, he was like, hey, pal, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know, give me a call tomorrow and we'll have a chat. I called him. He never called me back. But when I got to TV, he said, from now on, before all your matches, I want you to go over them with X-Pac first.
Yeah, I read that. And I remember you telling me that, too, at the time.
Did he ever tell you that?
No.
Okay, wow.
No.
So,
and I never said, and I was like, I promise you, I never was like, you should have him out talk to me about his match, you know?
Yeah, well,
because who wants to, I don't mind getting the right kind of heat
mm-hmm.
at all. I'll take that kind of heat all day long, but not the asshole heat,
Here's the thing, though. By having Vince tell me to do that and him not telling you, like I didn't know. I thought maybe it was a project. Jericho was your responsibility because he said the same thing when Goldberg came into me. Goldberg's your responsibility.
Uh-huh.
What? But I did
learn. That was kind of my job there, though.
But I did learn a lot from you about the psychology of how
right?
to put together a match.
Yeah, and man, it took you about 2 or 3 matches to do it in.
But somebody
it was just somebody having to tell it to you the right way, right?
You're right.
I mean, it was somebody else. If it wasn't me, it would have been somebody else.
But still, I mean, I remember thinking back, and I was thinking back on it now, it's like it was actually another smart move by Vince, and it really helped. And I didn't know how long I was supposed to do it for, so I think I kept coming up to you probably for about the next 3 or 4 months.
I remember you coming up to me with Boss Man one time
or
something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, man. It was kind of uncomfortable feeling.
Mm-hmm. It's a little weird. Sure,
yeah, because you're
too.
My peer, man. You're not like somebody... You know, beneath me, you know.
But for me, it was weird, too, but it's what the boss told me to do. And then I'm like, this guy actually knows a lot of stuff. And
yeah,
that's when I realized how smart you were in the business.
And thank you. And I was never one of those guys, you know, like if there's like somebody with a certain gimmick and somebody comes in with a similar gimmick or a similar mm-hmm. style, like to get all standoffish and,
right.
you know, the defensive and feel like, you know, like they're a threat.
Someone's gonna steal your spot or something.
I was never that guy, man.
Yeah.
Like if you were... better than me, man. Like you're more than here.
Mm-hmm.
Like I got my spot. Like, and you'll get yours.
Right.
You
if
know?
You're good enough, you'll
get
it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's enough pie to go around.
Right.
Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, back to Sean Waltman, having a great conversation. And Sean, what was the difference for you when you first moved from WCW to WWE?
Man, it was so, except for the fact that once, toward the end, they kept me on the road for like 20, 25 days a month, which was killing me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, creatively and all that, and Kevin was such a, I got another story about Kevin Sullivan, but Kevin Sullivan was such a believer in really putting a lot of heat on the heels, right?
Yeah.
Strong heels.
Yeah.
Build the dragon up for, you know, to get
right,
Slade.
Right.
And I thought he was brilliant, Booker.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Halloween Havoc, and you and I, and Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I remember Kevin, like, telling me something about, like, you know, I don't know, he was frustrated. What? And I'm like, man, like, he should be a heel, man.
Frustrated with me.
Yeah. Wow. Not with you, but with himself on what to do.
Oh, I gotcha.
Because he's like, I got this guy. He looks like $1 million. He's great in the ring. And I'm like, oh, man, he's really good looking, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to, like, try to push somebody as anybody. In the door, I don't think you should push anybody as a baby face.
Hmm.
I think you should figure out... Get the reading, send them out there, and like either that or push them as a heel, and because like when you try to push babyface now, people shit on it.
It's a lot easier to make people hate you than it's
yeah, man.
Like you. Then once they start hating you, guess what? They start liking
you.
Yeah,
man.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So Sullivan was saying that to you. Oh, yeah. You said that to him.
Yeah, and like I'm sure, like I'm not the only one that thought that. Mm. Like I thought it was kind of. You know, I mean, how did you feel when he...
Oh, I was a heel in Japan.
Yeah, okay.
All the way up until... And then ECW, there was no heels and babyface, but everybody worked like a badass, like a heel.
Right.
So when I came into WCW, it felt very strange. I felt like I was taking a big step backwards into Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which in Knoxville and Memphis, you can still get away
you
with
worked
it.
There. You could do the white meat gimmick there, yeah.
I was
watching some stuff, some of that a couple weeks ago.
Right, and I was basically, my first night in, my first Nitro was against Alex Wright in a babyface match. He dives at me on the floor. I move. He hurts himself. I stay out there to tend to him, so it's a double countout. I remember Bobby Heenan on commentary goes, what an idiot. You take the win when you can get him. And that's what the world is thinking. Right. Yes, you are an idiot.
And they booked the finish that way?
They booked it that way.
That's great.
They brought me in as a white meat babyface,
right.
Which in this world now with the NWO was heels, but the coolest heels in town, which as you know became basically babyfaces.
Right.
So as a nondescript, no personality,
sure,
good looking babyface, I was dead in the water.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on for me, you know?
Sure. That's it's tough, it was, man. Yeah. It doesn't matter how much talent, like, I mean, if it's, you're not allowed to be you.
Yeah.
And I just remember, I can distinctly remember when you were finally let it all hang out.
Yes.
That's how I used to like to put it, man.
Yeah.
When you quit giving a shit, whether, like, because people don't want to look foolish, right? When they go, they're afraid. Oh, what if they don't, like, come, I don't know, what if they don't care with it? If you really feel it, man, they'll
if you feel commit,
it.
They'll come back.
Yeah.
How was it for you when you joined the NWO? Because the NWO originally was Hogan, Nash, and Hall.
It took me a while. I was supposed to come in way before I did, but they were kind of taking their time giving me my release here. Like, they were in no hurry, right?
Did you ask for your release?
Yeah, Vince let me. I went to rehab. You know, I was supposed to be the first, like, guy to go.
To WCW?
Yeah. I was the first guy to talk to them.
Oh.
Yeah.
I
met Barry Bloom out, and I was the first guy to, like, after Jesse to hook up with Barry Bloom.
Right.
Yeah. That's probably, like, is this on WWE Network?
No, it's just me.
Because I don't think they're a big fan of Barry Bloom's.
Well, they didn't like the fact that you had an agent.
Well, he raised...
That's why they don't like
him. Right, but it built the whole business up, though. Sure. I think, I mean, we all made money.
Yeah.
We all made tons of
and
money.
And also, too, we always talk about how this is an entertainment, you know, sure. billion-dollar entertainment conglomeration. Guess what? Every other entertainment, sports, music, acting, they have agents.
Yeah.
So we should all have agents, yeah. too, but it's still that old-school carny mentality
sure.
that there's still a little bit of it left, yep. and that's one of the biggest ones. You
absolutely.
Don't need an agent.
I'll get to that part, but... So I don't go, I'm out, I got hurt, so I'm out like training with Francois Petit out in Gold's Gym, you know, and I'm staying with Rich Menzer out there who has worked for Gold's Gym Enterprises. So I'm like, I want to go meet Barry Bloom and try to get some acting gigs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of us ever thought about ever leaving. Leaving WWE wasn't
why would you do
that? We felt like, you know, it was like the mafia.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it was really tough leaving here, man.
Mm.
Really tough.
Sure, yeah.
But when I heard about, like, when Barry told me, he goes, by the way, you know, Bischoff's throwing a lot of money around. And then he told me, and then when Barry told me what he thought I made and compared to what I really made, I'm like, whoo. Like, I'll take some of that money. I really love it here, but like...
It's business.
Yeah.
Because at the time, Vince did not have guaranteed contracts.
Correct.
He was just giving opportunities.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bischoff had guarantees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of money, man. And still, even then, like, it was just... I didn't make up my mind right away, like, oh, yeah, I want to get... It was just... That seed was planted, and it was something I was thinking about all the time. And so, like, you know, I told Scott and...
Wow.
Yeah. So, that's really how that ended up. I mean, that there's a different version of that.
Sure, but they went
there's
there.
The real story is that one.
Really?
Yeah.
So, but then Vince offered to give you a release, but I...
That's the thing. Those guys sign, right? And they get their contracts are up. And mine rolled over. I didn't give my own notice before my 90 days. And so they knew I was trying to leave, and I was stuck. And so I was getting buried, Chris. Just buried. Scott's leaving, and I do a diaper match with him, and I still do the job, and he's the one leaving, and I'm staying.
Wow.
That tells you what kind of heat I have, right?
Right, right.
So we did like a 19, 20-day run of Europe, you know, and it was the last time we were all together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And... I was just on a bat, like, I probably slept 10 hours the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy, you know? And I got back, and I got to TV. I went to TV with Kurt, and I just ate a handful of pills and thought it was a good idea to go into the production meeting afterwards.
Wow.
Yeah. And I fell out in the middle of the production meeting, and Vince sent me to rehab.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Right
yeah.
then and there.
Yeah, man. And then those guys... did the curtain call while I was in rehab. That's why I wasn't in on that.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I get out of rehab, and it was a great experience, you know. My addiction hadn't really wasn't as it seemed bad at the time, but compared to the shit I went through later on in life, mm-hmm. like it really I needed to learn. It was like going to school kind of, you know.
Going out of school to be
sober.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so I was great for like 6-7 years. Like after that, I just smoked my pot and mm-hmm. that was it. But I went back to, I wouldn't smoke a pot while I would, my first run as we were getting tested for it. You know, we were sneaking, like trying to get it whenever we could. But Vince brings me in, flies me in back into Stanford, and just has a meeting with me. That's where we were talking about the 4-hour wait for the meetings.
Uh-huh.
I waited like 4 hours just sitting there, you know.
He was making you wait.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And finally I got in there, and, you know, he's told me, like, that he really wanted me here and all of that. But, you know, Hunter was in the doghouse, and, like, he was saying, like, I kind of had to work my – way back up, kind of like what Hunter was going to have to do. And but if I wanted to go work for that billionaire asshole, and it was better, I thought it was, I'm giving you kind of a paraphrase
sure.
of exactly what he said. And if you think it's better for you and your family, I'll give you a week to think about it. So he got me all feel, all got me healthy, and then he told me I could go work for the competition. If I mean, I was a pretty good guy, if you ask me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was just like the, and he paid me like good money while I was in rehab. I got more money. I made more money while I was in rehab than I ever did working my ass off every day of the week. I swear, man. Like, I got like a $10,000 check for a Kuwait tour I never went.
Wow.
To. Yeah.
Wow.
Back in 90, like, what? Like, yeah. Back when nobody was getting shit. Whatever.
Right, right. See, but that's the thing, too. Vince also knows I can't pay as much as this guy, yeah. as Turner can. So I can't really hold you back from going if you want to go.
Sure.
You know, it's the same thing you did to Brett.
And I was like, I was cheating on my wife over in Europe, right?
Yeah.
Like, and so while I'm in rehab, like, one of her drug addict relatives is coming over and like looking for like spare pills or something that I might have had left over, and finds these pictures of me and this with this girl. Like, I'm all passed out and there's this girl on top of me, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not like having sex, but like,
yeah.
You know, she's no bra out. On her bra, and
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Giving me a massage, and I'm just like out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And but like, so I'm all like losing it because I, you know, you can't leave rehab,
right?
You know, right. And I'm thinking, oh, my wife's gonna leave me, and you know, and I, you know, I called Vince, you know, and I he talked to me for like an hour. I'm like, look, man, I promise you. He's like, you do your thing, your wife ain't gonna leave you. Mm-hmm. I promise. You know, he was exactly right. You know, I mean, he's just like, you got to just do the right thing, man. Just get your shit together and everything's going
to
be fine.
So it must have been hard for you to leave a guy like that, leave the WWE.
Yeah, it was extremely difficult. I couldn't tell him, Faye. I couldn't look him in the eye and tell him. I promise you that. Not at that time.
So, but you made the decision to go.
Yeah.
And then once you show up there, was it a whole... culture shock? Was it better in WCW?
It reminded me, the Global Wrestling Federation was run tighter than that, was more organized.
Wow.
Coming from here, man, and then going there, and they're like ripping the run sheet up and rewriting TV on a legal pad like 30 minutes before we're going on there live?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? I mean, mind you, the direction of the booking and all that, like, there was some good stuff too, but it was mainly... like the talent that pulled that off, in my opinion. Like,
right. Oh yeah.
You know, because what a mess, man.
Yeah.
And because I came from this Shark Tank environment, like, I'll be honest, man. And even with no promo skills, it was like being blessed with being put in the NWO.
Mm-hmm.
It was like taking candy from a baby. I'm not gonna lie. It was so easy to get over. It wasn't even funny. Just of the stuff that I learned, you know?
Yeah, because you knew.
Yeah.
You knew what to do.
Yeah. And it wasn't that I was that much more talented than anybody else.
But here's something, though, Sean, and this is what I'll say, because I likened it to coming from WCW to WWE was like Wizard of Oz. It's black and white. Then you open the door and it's color.
Okay, right on, yeah.
For you guys, it's the opposite. It's color, right? And then you go to this black and white world. But there's a way that Vince trains his guys, even from simple things like not looking into the camera when you do a promo. Mm-hmm. When you see that, it looks so JoJo.
Hi, JoJo Starbuck, yeah. JoJo
Starbuck. give the background of JoJo Starbuck, please. Give me the background of it.
Just like, it would be like the typical, like, stereotypical, like, you know, indie or like, hey, brother, you know, the guy with maybe like the bow tie and the tux jacket. And I'm not trying to cut down on the Fantastics because they were one of the greatest. But, you know, and the cheap sunglasses, you know, just JoJo, you know.
Yeah, JoJo Starbuck.
Yeah.
JoJo means Bush League.
Yeah.
But when you saw stuff like that, that guys were doing WCW that didn't have that WWE training, but you came from the world of Vince, and so did Scott, and so did Kevin. So you guys were already on a different level just because you learned those little tricks that Vince instills in all of us.
Yeah, plus we had just... A lot of, you know, Vince ran us to death.
Mm-hmm.
So every night was an experiment, mm-hmm. you know, and we learned like so much, like every night, just on, okay, this worked, that didn't, you know,
right.
And just that experience of, and you can't get it, man, not being out there in front of the people, in front of and you know, like, you know better than anybody, man, that every crowd's a little bit different.
Yeah.
you know, even though like what I call the main, what, you know, some of us call the main event style. Mm-hmm. Like somebody was asking me that on Twitter, like, how is it to adjust to the WCW style? And I'm like, what WCW style? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mean to, I'm not trying to be a dick.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there's just like, to me, there's just a main event like style and there's not.
Right.
You know, and that's universal. But still, there's different, you know, the crowds are different. And so you got to tweak it a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm.
But you have to learn that, though. Like you said, there is a main event style. I did not know that until I came here and started working with you and guys like that. You know, Bob Holly was great at it.
Right.
You know, knew how to work. It's the WWE style, which is the main event style. That's how you work a match.
Sure.
You know, whereas WCW for me was more, I was with all the luchadors and with all the guys of my clan who were all tremendous workers, but we all came from Japan and Mexico and Europe. So that was more of the style of what we were doing.
Sure. But, man, like, when I went to Mexico, when I moved down there and I worked for AAA, and like I was helping, I don't know if you know Moody Jack is. Anyways, he was like doing all kinds of the video production and writing TVs. Like he helped book, he was booked in Puerto Rico for Savio and stuff. But I think Carlos too. Anyways, you know, in Conan, I was doing a lot of helping with the writing and like I had a lot of creative input down there. But I didn't wrestle, I didn't work Mexican style. Everybody else already was doing that.
Right.
And like guys were like wanting to know, hey, how are you going out there and doing this and getting that reaction? And we're doing all this shit. And like the people are just whistling. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like some guys thought it was like some magic voodoo shit. You know? And I'm like, no, man.
It's psychology.
Yeah. I'm like, you guys are just, I mean, it's shit. Mm-hmm. It was so frustrating. I'm like,
but see, that's why a guy like Negro Casas is such a great worker, and it's not a great worker for Mexico. He's a great worker anywhere because he knows the psychology of what the business. What he knew best was, I remember he told me one time, because I worked with him a lot when I was in Mexico, he said, you have to know your people. He knew his audience and knew what they wanted to see. It was never flips and flops and flies. Right. He can work, he can do fast stuff, but it was always about the little tricks that he would use, psychology.
Yeah.
You know, so
and it was always the stuff that got the biggest reaction.
Yeah. I remember one time we were in Acapulco and it was super humid and super wet inside the whole arena and he had so much heat and he went to grab the microphone. He went to grab it. He acted as though it shocked him. And people were laughing at him and like Culero and from nothing.
Culero,
just like, oh.
Too much.
Yeah, and it was like, wow, like what a great trick.
Yeah.
Just from nothing. But that's not a Mexican style. That's just work. Like
that's
you just said.
He's just brilliant.
Yeah, but and then you said too, you're going to Mexico. How are you doing it? Just by using technology.
Man. Yeah, right. y'all are already doing that.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to see another guy
leave
doing
that. Up to y'all.
Trust me.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Sean Waltman finally here on Talk is Jericho. But when you went to WCW, you were Six instead of X-Pac. How did you get that name, Six?
That was just Erickson called me Six.
Were you the sixth guy?
I was supposed to be. I don't know if technically I ended up because of, you know, the whole dangling the release carrot in front of me.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. When you finally got in there.
Because I was supposed to come at Road Wild, and I was even there, but I didn't have my release.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they were just playing games with you.
Sure, why not?
But you became, like, a really important part of the new, because you were, like we said before, you were the bump. You could bump around. Yeah. You're the bump guy.
I was a guy, like, that's why I was in we were the Wolfpack. Mm-hmm. We wanted to be, like, the Freebirds, you know? I mean, we're not Zach, but I'm definitely Buddy Jack, 100%.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, right. Come totally. On. I mean, if we're the Freebirds, I'm Buddy Jack.
Yeah.
Not that I, like, no, because Bam Bam could work too, but I mean, just my role.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, guy comes in and gets his ass kicked. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The other guy beats him, and then I come in and, you know, stomp while he's down. That kind of shit. But, you know, they wanted to, when Flair came back from his shoulder injury in Charlotte, and him and Kevin Green and Piper, it was versus Scott and Kevin and they wanted and it was and me and but they wanted Hogan, you know, and I get it. Mm-hmm. But at the time, and the guys were winding me up too, just Scott Steiner just revving me up, you know. And like, there was serious heat between me and Rick.
Really?
Big time, yeah.
For what reason?
Because I thought he was trying to freeze me out. Like, I'm like, so I'm going to be in the main event and you're trying to cut me out, you know. Like, I was hungry, man, and I was going to get, like, my respect.
Right.
You know? And so, like, I said some pretty heavy shit to him, and I even slapped the living dog shit out of him.
No
right
kidding.
On live TV, yeah, because he was killing me on the mic, right? And, like he sliced dice anybody, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I bowed up to him, and he pushed me. And when he put his hands on me, man, like, bam, I just knocked the shit out of him. And he's, like, chasing me around the whole building and stuff.
And you ran away.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What happened backstage?
He was so brief. His face looked like a beat. I thought we were going to fight.
Oh, wow.
He was like, oh, that was good. I'm like, oh, good. I'm glad you think so. Because it was, but, like.
Oh, really? So backstage
it was
cool
good because it was real.
Wow.
Yeah. But when we went out there, I was always, my main objective was to make Ric Flair, you know, give the people the Nature Boy.
Right.
The Nature Boy's greatest hits. Like, when we wrestled in this Philadelphia Spectrum, he just wanted, like, we're like, well, whatever you want to do, like, I'll just listen to you. Like, he would start calling, like, him versus him and Flair Steamboat spots, with me doing the go, like, flip behind and roll him up. I'm like, no, they don't want to see that, Rick. Come on, man. They want you to be the baby face.
Yeah.
Embrace it, man.
He wasn't as good of a baby face as he was a heel. He was a very natural heel.
Right.
But for him, as a baby face, it's a little awkward.
When we worked with him, like, we got it out of him, like, because we were so.
But you were calling it, though.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And which I'm sure was kind of foreign to him because he's called and carried so many guys.
Absolutely.
Like, he's carried the worst shit I've ever, like Jack Veneno in the Dominican Republic, who he had to drop the belt to get out of there alive.
Rufus R. Johnson.
Rufus R. Frank, save the bones for Rufus R. Jones.
Jones, that's it.
Yeah.
Rufus Jones, yeah.
Had a hog down to his knees. That's Slick's dad.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Supposedly, yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
a hog down to his knees.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff you never heard
before.
Oh,
yeah. Burhead Jones, too.
But being so close to Scott and Kevin, and being, like I said, a pivotal guy in the NW, especially, I always found that you got heat. Those guys, they got into the cool heel mode.
Right.
Ooh, what are you going to do? You actually got heat.
Yeah.
And but then you almost got that used against you, though, with Bischoff, because he was having problems with.
Yeah, well, and I get it, man. I look at it from both sides. I see his side too, because I mean, we didn't mind waving the print flag at any particular moment, and there was a lot of reasons to do so, and a lot of times it wasn't warranted. Regardless. Their contracts, because of the way I came in, I didn't have as much leverage as Scott and Kev did, right? So they had this ironclad, like, they were unpunishable.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the heat, you know? And when I was out with the broken neck, then, you know, and there was other things involved. And it wasn't like, I see Eric's side too, totally. But,
right.
You know, he was mad at them. And so he sent my termination. You know, but 10 months after, like, I'm just about ready to come back.
Right. Oh, you've been out for 10 months?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So and the whole time, Scott's have every in-ring, because, you know, every week there's an in-ring with Hogan.
Yeah,
and we made Hogan call, you know, shout out to Six-Pac back home. And everybody was wearing the Six-Pac. So it was like I was on TV every week.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
wow.
Man.
So you got fired before you even made your return?
Yes. And that's when I came the next
instantly
day after Mania.
Instantly fired?
Yeah, so and he was like, and so Scott and Kev were hot, right? And like, they actually went into pulled Bischoff into the office by themselves. Like, Scott and Kev did the whole take the watch off thing and fire my butt, you know.
It's gonna be a fight.
Yeah, that kind of thing, right? And that was, mind you, I wasn't there, so I don't know exactly how it went.
Mm-hmm.
But
But once again, like you said, Eric had a lot of resolve as well.
Yeah, man. Hey, look, Eric got a lot of balls, man.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Huge respect for that guy. Mm-hmm. Huge.
Yeah.
Wasn't a big fan of him over that firing, but.
Well, at the time, you know, it was different. time. Yeah. Like, I wasn't a fan of him either when I left. Now I consider him to be a pretty cool guy.
Hell yes.
You know, he's a friend, you know?
Absolutely. And you can, but, you know, so he was expecting me to give him a call, and I'm like, man, no, I've been sitting at home. Like, I'm thinking to myself, first of all, I told Kev, I'm like, Dad, tell him to call me, right? Like, I'm not, I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's another part to that story, though. I never actually signed my contract with WCW because I was trying to get a raise, and all I had was a deal memo because, you know, Barry, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why, like, when I had my broken neck, I didn't want to – I kept working for a couple weeks because I'm trying to get this raise. Just killed it at that pay-per-view at Flair, Viper, and Green.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, thinking I'm justified to ask for it. And so – but no.
Didn't get it, yeah.
No.
I worked there for 17 months without signing my contract.
Yeah. So, no, obviously you didn't look surprised when I said that.
I just wanted to see how long I could go after a while. And no one knew until that Diana Myers came in. Then she, sure. Like, next day had me sign.
Same thing when I got here. When I came back here, it was several months.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's because nice. Because I came up with X-Pac, right? Oh, okay. And I wanted to own it. And obviously there it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And we were going back and forth over some little minor things, like, you know, like you always ask for more shit, and like then you can give some back. Yeah. The art of negotiation.
Sure, of course. That's what negotiation is. Yeah.
Yeah, I learned a lot when it comes to that.
Was X-Pac a derivative of Tupac? Or
it was. Well, I was six. See, that was one thing when I came here. I had WWE put in a contract that I owned Six-Pac Kid.
Oh, all that. Six-Pac, right?
Yes. And right. Then so when he was like, I remember because Vince knew I didn't want to be the kid anymore, right? And yeah. He goes, well, how about if we call you the man? And I'm like, oh, because you don't want to tell the boss that's a fucking shit, right?
Especially when you just got fired.
But you know what? He doesn't really care if you tell him it's the shit.
Well, he likes it.
Yeah.
No one tells him anything's the shit.
Yeah.
So when you say it's the shit, he'll probably laugh. And go, yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
You know? The man.
Yeah. Could you imagine that?
That's just your name, the man.
Plus, how the fuck do you live up to that?
Oh, it's terrible, right? Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, I am a man. Because people will tell me that sometimes. I'm sure you hear it. Hell, you're the man, Jerry.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm a man. Yeah. I don't know if I'm the man.
Yeah, I'm a man. I almost was the man. Yeah. So when you came back here, was it kind of like a little bit of a, like we mentioned, going back to like, oh, this is so much more organized and so much more of a machine, you know?
Yeah, it was amazing.
Right.
It was the greatest time of my life.
Really? Yes. When you came back, more so than WCW?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
It was 10 times. And I'm not taking anything away from that because that was amazing too. Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to emphasize just how amazing that experience
was.
Right,
right.
Yeah.
When you came back.
Because it's hard to put that in words, man, you know?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and when you came back with just a scathing promo.
I mean, it wasn't smooth, but it was real.
Remember when you said you got up so close?
If you stop short. Bishop's going to go so far up your ass, going to know what you have for breakfast.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah. Talking about Hogan or something like that. Yeah.
Well, Hulk had said, you know, I couldn't cut the mustard, so, like, know, on TV, like, after it had already been canned.
You don't forget that stuff.
Well, I didn't take it personal. I just knew I had to, you know, get him back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was no big deal. Honestly, man, I'm not one of those guys, like, it's got to be something kind of really heavy, like, for me to take it personal. Mm-hmm. Not, like, sticks and stones type shit.
Especially when you're in this business.
Right.
You just know that's just the nature of the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I had Hunter on this show last year, and we were talking about, it's like, you know, because we didn't get along when I first came in. And then you think about it, and you're like, why didn't we get along? Right. What's the problem? Two guys that love the business, that love to work each other and have great matches, and we hated each other? Like, why? But that's just part of growing up in this world, you know?
Yeah, all of these things, so much of like that type of thing just seems so silly.
Talking about your relationship with Vince and how much you enjoy being here and all stuff, it really surprises me that you don't have a job here in creative. Or would you?
No, I've never even asked because we don't have to, like, the things that I did after I left here, man, like, I'm just grateful, like, to be a part of this company.
Of the family, yeah.
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing was ever, like, done. Like, I never said bad things about the company. But I made an ass out of myself. And, you know, it was an embarrassment to the business from my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, you know, all that shit with a sex tape, and you know, you know, every other week some kind of bullshit, you know.
Right.
So there's that, and I don't know. I'd do anything if they ever asked me to do. If they had told me to come do, hey, we want you to come do, you know, be creative or go to NXT or do whatever, I would do it, you know.
Maybe they're just waiting to see, like,
you gotta have some time, man. You gotta have a track record, and I have now, but still, like,
are you sober now?
Well, I still smoke a lot of pot.
Right. But so off the others.
Oh yeah, stuff? Man. Nothing. I'm like healthy, dude. Yeah.
See, that's great. Yeah. And maybe they're just waiting to see, you know, is this going to be a month, a year, 2 years, and then, like you said, get a track record.
But the thing is, Chris, I do very well. I'm just fine, man.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
at the same time.
I got you. Yeah. Let's be honest.
Work business is good.
Yeah, gotcha.
So, you know, like, just working here is working here.
Sure. This is the big leagues.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. You know, I was talking to Bubba and Devon when they came back here after working in TNA for a while. And you know, any company that exists, I love it. It's good for the boys.
Yeah, man.
But you come here, it's the Super Bowl every night, man.
Of course.
You know, it really is. What do you like? You mentioned you working a lot on the independents and stuff like that. Do you enjoy working? Do you work with other guys with name value? Do you like working with younger guys? You just work with whoever they tell you to
I
work
like
with?
Working with the younger guys, Chris. Mm. Because, well, first of all, I do tag matches now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, like I told you earlier, I injured my pec. And,
right.
And that was serious, pretty serious injury, but I'm still able to
work.
Continue, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I have my greatest tits, right? We were talking about earlier.
Bronco Buster,
two variations of a spin kick, you know. Suck it, X Factor.
There you go.
You know, maybe a quick leg drop here and there.
Yeah. You always did those really good.
Thanks.
The Lightning Kid leg
sure.
drop.
Yeah. That was good. Like Muda. And
yeah.
It was a combination of Muda's elbow and Brett's leg drop.
Ah.
Because Brett always dropped a tight leg drop.
Right. But you're doing with this, like, off the ropes.
Yeah.
So those are the greatest hits of X.
Sure,
yeah.
You know.
And can you still use the name X-Pac?
Oh, of course.
They're cool with that.
That's not of course, because that's a good question.
Right. A lot of guys can't.
And you know, at any time they could say, hey, not to me. They would never. There might be some promoter that they don't particularly like, and they might go, hey, no.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, they don't.
That's cool.
That shows
a little bit of faith in you as well.
Yeah.
You know, because like once you just mentioned the Dudleys come to mind, they weren't allowed to be Dudleys anywhere.
If I was, when I went to TNA, you know, I was six pack, and they were just wanting to call me Sean Waltman because they're so litigation shy down there. They would bow. Like, you guys are pussies. Like, I'm like, here's the freaking contract right here. It says I own the goddamn name.
Yeah.
Now tell them to F off.
Right. Just a couple last things, man. There's something I got to ask you about, because I think you talked about this on Open Anthony or something. Did you like bust your ass? Like,
I tore my asshole.
You legitimately tore your asshole. And I don't know if this is a story that you.
I don't mind.
How the hell did you tear your asshole?
Missing the Bronco Buster
into
the turnbuckle, the threads and everything. Yeah.
So you kind of landed.
Came into horizontal. You know, 45 degrees is how I was supposed to come in on that.
And you came straight across.
A few times, so, I came
like
in.
You dragged your ass across.
Yeah, man. Like I was a dog scooching, trying to wipe the shit off his ass.
I was just thinking that. Wow. Now, I would think that probably is a pretty bad pain.
It was awful.
Like one of the worst pains you could probably have.
It was awful. The arm thing was worse, but yeah, it was terrible.
Did you know right away?
Yeah. Because you could see me. Because I actually, as crazy as this sounds, like about 2 years prior to that, I did pretty much the same exact injury. I just figured, what's the chances of me tearing my asshole ever again? It's just the second time I did it, I had to have sphincterplasty surgery to repair it.
Sphincterplasty?
Sphincterplasty.
Plasty.
Yeah. They had to call the special doctor in because nobody really had ever done that.
Well, it's not.
You know, and like, if I wouldn't, like, had wrestling gear on, they would have been like, yeah, right, you did that wrestling. Yeah, right?
Trying to stick a freaking bowling pin up your ass or something.
Exactly.
So, dude, that must have, like, you can't sit. I mean, I've had a bad Cossack's injury, which is in your tailbone.
That's brutal, yeah.
I'm sure this is probably just as bad.
It's different. The thing is it was Jerry Lynn's retirement match. And there was like one or two other guys, in the match. So it was like a fatal four-way type situation.
Gotcha.
So I finished the match. There was like probably 10 more minutes left. But as soon as I landed, I'm like, oh, you could see me. You could see me. And like they showed on TMZ and all that.
Dude, and once again, not laughing, but it's so...
It's funny, man. Funny. Come on.
It's ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
Like, I tore my ass.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and like I had the surgery, and like I was in diapers. And,
oh, dude.
Yeah, and see, yeah.
The stuff we go through, and people say sometimes, like, that... Right there, it's a true warrior right there, man. You
know? Yeah, and I did my finish off the top rope onto a guy after I tore my ass.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long were you healing from that?
I don't know.
4 to 6 weeks? Or?
It was like months.
Oh.
And there's still some stitches in there because, like, who's going to go to the doctor and go, hey, bend over and go, will you take, oh, shit. Sorry.
It's all right, dude. Don't worry about it.
Who's gonna, would you mind taking these stitches out of my asshole? I just spilled a bunch of water everywhere for everybody at home.
Okay. It's all right. Fuck. Under the circumstances, it's okay. Last question, and this is a hard one, but I always like to ask it. If you had to pick one or two of your matches that you stand out as your favorites, is there one or two that stand out for you?
The Bret Hart, my match versus Bret Hart.
Was that on Raw?
As a singles match.
On Raw?
Yeah, on Raw.
Mm.
Yeah, I just had a match at King of the Ring with Owen.
Which was one of the best four-minute matches I've ever seen.
Thank you.
And
that was what like Brett said after we got back from the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might have been one of the first times I ever worked with Owen. But, you know, we managed to cram a ton into that match without making it seem rushed.
Right, right.
And that's amazing to me because we did a ton. Yeah, I mean, we really did a lot for that amount of time.
But not a lot where it didn't make sense. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a lucha match. There's a powerbomb off the top. You just did a lot of stuff, but it all...
Everything was
led
sold.
To the next. You know?
Yeah, and like, I mean, I had no choice to sell that missile, that baseball kick he hit me with through the ropes when I was staggering.
Oh, wow.
He killed me, man. If you go back and watch it, the lights are out.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm like selling the 3 pile drivers Jeff Jarrett gave me earlier in the night.
Wow.
In round one, right?
Oh, because it was like a King of the Ring.
King of the Ring,
yeah.
So Brett, you know, they booked, they tell Brett, like... And so I can't remember, Pat came up and said, yeah, you're going to work with Kid, you know, and they gave us like 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And Brett turned himself heel a little bit just to like get.
He was so good, man.
He was great.
So good.
Awesome.
People forget now because he's been gone for such a long time, but it's between him and Sean for me as who's the best.
For sure. Yeah. You know? And it's just a matter of taste.
Yeah. You're right.
You know, everything's subjective, you know, so.
I agree.
I wouldn't argue with either, like one or like Flair or you know,
the
trifecta.
There's your Mount Rushmore right there.
Yeah.
My favorite one that we had, and I just remember this as we were talking when you said Fatal 4-Way.
Yeah,
was you versus me versus Eddie versus Chris in Las Vegas.
I forgot we had that, and then somehow I ran across it, and I was like. Wow.
Does it hold up?
Yeah.
Wow, because I haven't seen it in my head. I just remember. I remember because
I spin kicked Benoit's head off with one of those kicks, and I went like this, and you did the O'Connor roll on me.
Right.
That into the bridge.
Yeah, that was a finish.
Yeah.
And I remember the reason why another is we were backstage going over it, and it wasn't coming together. We didn't have
there was
ideas.
A few wrinkles that needed to be ironed out. And
yeah, but then I remember we were kind of running out of time. And we just either put it together really fast or just kind of left the rest to let's just do it.
Yeah.
And it was just like, talk about four guys at the peak of their games in this match that was just kind of thrown together.
And everybody was like on the same page, man.
Right.
Everybody was working together, man. That's the thing about like sometimes in Mexico, guys are selfish down there and they're not working for the match, they're working for themselves.
Sure, right. Get their shit in.
Yeah, yeah.
That was not the case.
No, man.
Like that might be my favorite match I ever had with Eddie as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like, one of the coolest too, man, and I have to apologize to you for something. Probably more than one thing if I sit and think about it. But our cage match that we had.
Yeah.
And I thought it was an excellent match.
Yeah, absolutely. Those
okay,
walls,
but really, man, a lot of that was just we did it out there.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I told you to backdrop me into the cage, you were like, you crazy son of a bitch. I don't remember exactly what it was, but you're like, are you
kidding
me?
That was probably the idea, yeah.
Yeah. But the finish I thought was so cool, right? Like I'm standing on. No, well, that was awesome. That was the first time anybody ever put like a platform on top of a cage here.
Yeah, platforms for us.
Yeah, yeah.
What was what you were standing on?
I climbed down, right? I somehow kick you off of the. I should have let you kept me in the Walls of Jericho longer, because the people were really coming with it, right? Yeah.
Then you flip me out of
it. Yeah, you go down. I climb down, right? I'm standing on the cage door, and I'm like, yeah, and everybody's thinking I win, and you drop kick the cage, and I land on my balls on the, cage door.
Yeah.
And then out you go, and the place went nuts. They went banana.
Yeah, banana.
Yeah.
Why do you have to apologize?
Because I was out all night getting messed up and didn't have any sleep the night before. And remember, I hurt my neck on the power bomb up the top of the cage, and you weren't even really wanting to give that to me.
That's right.
You know?
I remember you didn't show up till about 4
exactly,
or 5
because I was like, I had like went out and did ecstasy and like bought a hooker or something. And didn't even bang her. And you know what? Like, pretty much, like, that's like the, that. I don't do that stuff anymore.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
But I mean, you know.
I remember. I was like, where the hell is he, man? This is a cage match on a pay-per-view. And then you finally got there and you're like, what's up, dude? I'm like, hey, man. You know, all right.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
it's good talking to you,
too, man.
We could do this for another hour, 2 hours next time, but it's great.
Yeah.
It's great to
see you, man.
What a great conversation with Sean Waltman. Just a great dude and a tremendous guy. If you want to hear more of Sean's crazy wrestling stories and his incredible insight into the pro wrestling business and the psychology surrounding it, check out his podcast, X-Pac 12360, on the AfterBuzz Network. You can subscribe on iTunes or watch it on YouTube. You're going to get a lot of insight into everything pro wrestling with one of the smartest guys I've met in the job, talking about Sean Waltman. Thanks to him for being here. And thanks to you guys for doing all your holiday shopping through the Talk is Jericho Amazon links. Easiest way to support the show, and hopefully it's taking some of the stress out of shopping and gift giving. Remember, you find my Amazon links at podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Amazon links in the USA, the UK, the Canada. Every time you use Talk is Jericho, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. You buy anything you think of on Amazon, and using them Amazon links won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. You want to become a Jericho Amazon warrior, take a picture of what you buy on Amazon, post it on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I will retweet it and I'll follow you, all right? And thanks again to all my other great sponsors who you can also find on the Killer Deals button. DDPYoga.com/Jericho. Buy a max pack or a combo pack and get a second one for 50% off. DraftKings. Use my promo code Y2J to play for free with no deposit this weekend. Great MMA fights coming up. Omaha Steaks. Go to omahasteaks.com and use my promo code Jericho. Put that in the search bar and get a whole family gift pack of tasty treats and meats for just $49.99. Then Lisa.com. Use my promo code Jericho. Get $75 off your mattress battle. And don't forget, you got 100 days to try that mattress out. If you don't like it, they'll come pick it up for free. That's leesa.com, Lisa.com. And Pure d'Or, if you got problems with thinning hair, you'll get an extra $20 off when you order at 2MinuteClub.com/Jericho. Number 2, 2MinuteClub.com/Jericho. All right. Thanks again for checking out Talk is Jericho and the Jericho Network on Podcast 1. We got a new podcast coming up on the Jericho Network. Drop it on Monday, December 19th. The fourth show, I know you're going to love this one. You guys always talk about the paranormal guests, Amy Bruni and Adam J. Berry, talking about the kindred spirits this past week. But now, we got two of the experts in the field, Beyond the Darkness, hosted by Tim and Dave from Darkness Radio. It's a whole new show, bringing the Darkness Radio franchise, I guess you'd say, the brand, over to Talk is Jericho. Beyond the Darkness, all new show every week with Dave and Tim. They've got some great guests, creepy stories, experiences. You will be riveted. So let the Jericho Network keep you entertained all week long. Of course, Talk is Jericho every Wednesday, Friday. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus every Tuesday. Keeping it 100 with Conan on Thursdays. And the big feud between Disco Inferno and Cyrus brewing. I don't know what's going to happen between those two shows. And of course, Team Tiger Awesome every Sunday. Great episode this week about Nick Mundy being a hero, facing Kevin James, TSA, and the El Bandita Fuego, the Fire Bandit. Of course, the Ridiculous Musings of T-Tiger Awesome. If you haven't checked it out, you should start now. Go to iTunes, hit the subscribe button, subscribe and stars for all of them. We thank you very much for that. And don't forget, March 15th, 2017, it's the biggest podcast ever when Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho and the countdown rolls on and on and on, 95 days and counting. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And coming up next Wednesday, oh, yeah, we got a very special guest is coming up on Wednesday. I'm going to tell you right now who it is. You want to know who it is? Huh? You want to know who it is? I'm going to tell you. World's Loudest Podcast is going to be here. If you're a rock fan, you know Carolina Rebellion, Rock on the Range, Northern Invasion, the biggest rock festivals in the world today are happening thanks to the fine guys at Danny Wimmer Productions. We got Gary and Clay from Danny Wimmer Productions telling us all about what it takes to put together a major rock and roll festival, working with Soundgarden, working with Guns N' Roses, working with Metallica, working with Avenged Sevenfold, and all the trials and tribulations that they have in putting together the hugest rock festivals in the world today. It's the World's Loudest Podcast this Wednesday. We'll see you then. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.